Welcome to an all-new episode of Jet Nation Radio. Dennis Agapito and Tyson Roche give their opinions on the latest Jets news.
How about our offense? When are we going to put it together? When are we going to put it together? Can we not run the ball down their throats every snap? Can we not throw it any time we want to throw it? Can we have fun? You're damn right. I demand that we have fun.
And now here they are, your hosts, Dennis and Tyson.
Good evening, Jet Nation, and welcome to another wonderful episode of Jet Nation Radio. This is Dennis Agapito. And of course, as you know, this is an interactive show, and it really doesn't work without the audience participation. So, if you want to express your opinion on what's going on with our New York Jets, maybe you're frustrated. Maybe you want to vent a little bit. Maybe you don't like the way the organization's heading. Or maybe you're thrilled. Or maybe you're somewhere in between. Maybe you want to discuss some of the recent signings or lack thereof. Please give us a phone call. The telephone number is 646-716-4697. Please hit 1 when prompted. Steve is eagerly awaiting your phone call. Also, if you don't really want to talk, maybe a little shy, you can follow the conversation on Twitter. It's at Jet Nation Radio. But without further ado, I want to bring on a passionate fan, passionate Jets fan, an NFL insider, my friend and co-host. I think he has a lot to say tonight, folks. I think he's got a lot to say. So let's bring him on right now, Mr. Tyson Roush. So, Tyson, how are you this fine evening, my friend?
Dennis, I mean, I've got to be great tonight. I mean, the Jets signed Jacoby Ford. I mean, we are talking progress. We're talking championship. We're talking high-caliber offense right now, Dennis. I'm all fired up.
Well, that is very exciting, Jacoby Jones. Jacoby Ford, excuse me. I keep saying Jacoby Jones, maybe wishful thinking. Jacoby Ford. Yeah, that's very exciting. I think you can find him on the back of a milk carton. It isn't exactly a very exciting signing, but you know what? It's probably a guy you bring into camp and just a guy who's going to compete for a role, and if he doesn't make the team, he doesn't make the team. So that's kind of the way I feel, but you feel a little differently?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, he's missed 28 games over the last three seasons. I mean, he has world-class speed. He could be a slot receiver. I mean, to me, he's a long shot to make the team, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it's so funny, and I guess this is where I'm going to start with you, Dennis, is John Idzik, for some, has become like the best GM in football. He has the best philosophy. Everything he's done is calculated. It's perfect. It's right. And I'm like, come on. I mean, at some point, the guy is making mistakes. So, like, not every move he makes is genius. And, you know, the minute the Jets signed Jacoby Ford, I got tweets like, he's going to have three returns for touchdowns. This guy's going to be a game-breaking guy we need. And it's like, come on. Take a deep breath, relax. This is not the case. I mean, for me, Dennis, personally, I'd be surprised he makes the team. I think there's a lot of competition at the wide receiver position. I mean, they're probably going to draft a guy, a young guy. So if he's going to make the team, it's going to be as a returner, and there could be competition there. I mean, if Goodson stays or a variety of things. So, you know, it's a move. It's competition. I mean, me personally, I'd rather have a Jason Avant. If you want to sell me on a receiver, sell me on a Miles Austin, sell me on a Sidney Rice, sell me on Jason Avant. Jacoby Ford, for me, it's a great sign. It's a signing. I mean, Dimitri Patterson, I think, has some value. He's more of a slot corner. I mean, he gets hurt a lot, too. But, you know, it's just not every move Idzik makes is the best move in the world, Dennis. I mean, we understand his philosophy. He's trying to do some bargain shopping. He's trying to do things. But, I mean, at some point, you got to say, okay, this is a move. It is what it is, and move on. You understand what I'm saying or no?
No, Tyson, you lost me a little bit. We're flirting with Gimbal Lock a little bit. Are you upset with Idzik, or are you mad at him? Do you think that he's done a poor job? I mean, thus far,
I'm fine with Idzik's approach. But if we're truly honest about John Idzik, be very honest.
Okay.
Last year, he did what he was supposed to do. He cleaned that. He made the necessary moves to clean up the cap, which were all prescribed. You knew exactly what he was going to do. There were no brainer moves. You know, he had a limited cap space. He did the best he could with that. This year, he did the same thing. The moves with Santonio, Crow, and Sanchez, Tenenbaum would have did them too. They're no-brainer moves. So let's not go back and say his first year to me was a wash. He did the things he was supposed to do. He had a good draft. He got Sheldon. He got D. He got Chris Ivey. He made some good moves. But this is his first year he's putting a blueprint on the team. So I'm not going in this saying, you know what, Is he a guaranteed great general manager? He still has a lot to prove to me, and that starts with this draft class. I mean, free agency is saying, you know what, I'm not going to – he made this big splash with Decker, but he's being very calculated, which is fine. But if you're calculating, you blow this draft, you're sending this organization back 2 years. So I'm not going to throw bouquets out. I mean, my problem is that while everybody has bought into the Isaac philosophy, not only are they drinking the Kool-Aid, they're distributing it and selling it in mass production now. It's like, let's keep everything in perspective here. And this guy has a long way to go to build this franchise, have a quality draft, and get this team to be playing at a high level. I mean, don't you agree?
Well, I don't think everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid, like you said. I think there are some people that really like his approach, and there are some people that despise it. I mean, some people are saying, we have this cap space. Why didn't he do more? A lot of the free agents that we wanted are now gone. Why didn't he sign Dominic Rogers-Cromartie? Or why didn't he get Vontae Davis when they were looking at him? Why didn't they bring in Darrell Revis? Remember, we had Hank call us and say he should have brought in Darrell Revis, or, you know, DeMarcus Ware I heard about, or Jared Allen. I mean, there's been a lot of names out there that the Jets didn't sign that, you know, a lot of the fans wanted. But I guess my question is this, and why I look at John Idzik and why I'm satisfied with what he's done is, for example, I'm the greatest post-better who ever lived. Now, a lot of people claim to be the greatest post-better, but I'm the greatest post-better who ever lived. After a game is over, I can tell you I knew that was going to be the final score, and I should have bet on that game. See, a lot of people are great post-drafters or post-free agency people. After it's over and done with, they say, I would have drafted this guy here, or I would have done this. And it's a lot easier to do that. But here's the one thing that I do like about John Idzik. He places a value on a player, whether it's through the draft, free, whatever it is. And he says, you know what? In my mind, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, it's wrong for me to beat that contract and give him that contract that the Giants gave him, to beat it. I don't feel comfortable doing it. I don't think it's the right move for the organization. I'm not going to do it. And I don't care how much heat I take for it. In my mind right now, at this moment, with all the information I have, that's the wrong decision. So it's not a popularity contest, and maybe sometimes in the past, moves were made based upon popularity, not necessarily based upon what was best for the team. And the other thing is this, is that John Idzik is paid to make difficult decisions at times. And I think that winning organizations is not one out there that hasn't had to let a player go or not sign a player or say thank you very much and go in a different direction and look at options. Easy decisions are easy. Look, hey, you want Jarius Bird? Here's $60 million. Here you go. Boom. DeMarcus Ware? Boom. Here you go. Here's the same better contracted guy with Denver. Darrell Revis? Boom. There goes all your money, and then people might scratch their heads next year or a year or so down the line when the Jets are old, slow, and have no resources to go get guys and say, well, why are we getting Chaz Schillens and we're not getting Matt Forte and Mario Williams? There's a reason for that.
Yeah, but Dennis, I agree with you to a point, but here's my question for you. Coming into mm-hmm. free agency, everybody said, we have an idea what John Idzik's guys are. They could be guys from Seattle, guys he knows from there. Could be guys from Arizona based on the front office ties. None of that happened. So my question for you is, based on what we've seen, what is a John Idzik guy? What kind of guy is he talking right now? What you tell me, from your perspective, based on what we've seen over the last year and a half, what is a John Idzik kind of player?
Well, I think a John Idzik type of player is a player who's going to meet the value for what he's paying. Now, look, I'm not saying John Idzik is beyond reproach, but neither is the organization. I know I tend to be a Jet homer, but look, you remember last year, Tyson, you'll back me up. I said that John Idzik needed to take heat for signing Mike Goodson and what happened with Mike Goodson. And I still now will say right now, John Idzik has got to take heat for that. He's the one who put the contract out there, so he takes heat for that. I also said that Rex Ryan should take heat for putting Mark Sanchez in a game that he had no business being in. So the organization is not above reproach. I definitely think there is criticisms to be made of the organization. But as far as, you know, who John Idzik guy is, a guy like Chris Ivory is a John Idzik guy. You know, again, everybody's panicking, and they hear this word patience, and they think patience means 3 or 4 years down the road. Look, a guy like Eugene Monroe, right? The Baltimore Ravens needed a left tackle. They made an in-season trade to get Eugene Monroe, and now he's still with the team. John Idzik made a trade. Now, remember, Chris Ivory When did people start talking about Chris Ivey potentially coming to the Jets? Maybe 10 days out of the draft? I mean, this was something that wasn't on anybody's radar, and then all of a sudden kind of crept up, and then boom, he was on the team. And you know, he had a pretty good year last year. I think most people would agree that they were pretty satisfied with that trade. So there's a lot of things that can happen between now and the start of the season, and even during the season, that can bring bodies in here. You talked about Jason Avant and Miles Austin. I think that John Idzik wants to focus on his draft, get his draft, get a look at his draft class, and then look at the guys like Miles Austin, Jason Avant, Sidney Rice, you know, who's ever out there, Trevell Wharton if he needs help at guard. There are guys out there, there's still second-tier free agents out there who are pretty decent, who can fill a role here. So that's what I think John Idzik's doing. So I think the John Idzik guy is a guy who he looks at and says, I'm getting the proper value for this player and production for what I'm paying for them. Here's a question for you, Tyson. If Lijay Doosable walked into John Idzik's office and said, hey, John, I want $8 million next year, meaning this year, 2014. $8 million or I'm not coming. Should he sign him?
No, absolutely not. But then I see what you're saying, but to me it's just like...
Well, why? Why? To have the cash base for
it? He has an assigned value, and he knows that, okay, if you're only worth 1.5, I'm not paying you 8. I mean, that's just...
Well, there you go. Well, isn't that what he's doing? Again, it's not about money. Again, with Cromartie, too, it's not about money. You see, Cromartie had a great 2012. Would you not agree that Cromartie had a great 2012, probably one of the best of his career? Is that true?
True.
Okay. In 2013, whether it was the hip or whatever it was, he had a down year. He admitted he had a down year. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely.
So here was a guy who one year had a great year, and then the next year had a very down year, a very poor year. And the Jets could have gotten him back at a very reasonable price. I don't think John Idzik looked at it and said, I don't want you back because you're going to cost me $5 million. He looked at it and said, you're not worth $5 million anymore. They must know something about his hip and about his abilities and things that you can't give me $5 million worth out there on the field. Otherwise, he would have signed him. I mean, he knows what we know. So maybe he thought Dimitri Patterson would be better and going into the draft and would give him better production than what Antonio Cromartie would give him this year. Forget about the money. Everybody's obsessed with the money. John Idzik doesn't care if he carries over $10 million or $15 million or $5 million. He wants to get value and production for the money he's spending. And if he, like you just said about the draft, the running back, you don't want, right? You, Chris Johnson, how about we get into this quick? We've got to call online. We'll let him on in a second. Chris Johnson. Now, I don't think the Jets should go after Chris Johnson. Again, I don't like running backs that, you know, Maurice Jones-Drew and this and that. I mean, I just don't think they need one. They got Ivory Powell, and they should draft one. That's what I think. And then maybe next year we'll see what happens with Powell when he becomes a free agent. Okay, and they got Goodson, too, and we'll see what happens with him. So I think they should go in the draft and draft a running back and not bring in Chris Johnson. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, right now, for me, Chris Johnson is the name that everybody's enamored with, and his 2,000-yard season and everything else. But for me, this is where John Idzik would step in and say, based on value and money, just based on the overall perspective, for me, I want a young, hungry, explosive, motivated running back coming out of college instead of Chris Johnson. To me, that's a no-brainer. I mean, same thing we talked about Jones-Drew. I throw Chris Johnson in the same category, and I respect his speed. I respect his game-breaking potential. But for me, that ship has sailed. I'd rather go young. I'd rather go to draft, just for a variety of reasons. So I definitely agree with you.
So so basically what you're saying is that you think you can get more production out of, like, Ivory Powell and a draft pick and kind of use them in a role. Let's say the draft pick is a guy like I say this a lot, Leon Washington type. So Ivory's kind of your grinder. You know, let's hope he stays healthy again. He has some health issues. Powell's kind of your serviceable number two, jack-of-all-trades, doesn't really give you that blazing speed, but can catch the ball in the backfield, can run between the tackles, and you bring in that Leon Washington type who's maybe touches the ball 10 times a game. That would probably – but forget about the cost. Because if Chris Johnson said, listen, I'll take $2 million, and if he was worth $2 million, I think they would bring him in. But I think at production-wise, you know, how do you kind of use Chris Johnson? I mean, is he going to be your featured back? Is he going to be behind Ivory? Does he want to be like that? There's a lot of questions that he sort of doesn't – again, this – sorry to say it, Tyson, round peg and square hole. And when you're building a team, and that's what Idzik's doing here, he's trying to build a team. He's building a team, and you got to get guys that fit their positions and fit their roles and know what their roles are. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean bringing in a bunch of splashy free agents, because that doesn't always work out, as we've seen in the past. I mean, again, the Oakland Raiders have brought in everybody under the sun, and I think Reggie McKenzie should just pack his bags now, because, I mean, what are they doing? We said this last week. It just doesn't make any sense. Just like, oh, I mean, they've got a great team from maybe if it was 5 or 6 years ago, they'd have a great team. I don't know if they have a great team right now.
Yeah, but Dennis, the only – and this is kind of the point I'm trying to get back to with Idzik. Listen, I appreciate his philosophy. I understand what he's trying to do. But my problem that I'm having is that there's a good portion of Jets Nation that is making this guy be much bigger than he is. And my point is this. He's going to make mistakes, and right now this draft – they're putting a premium on this draft. They're selling everybody the draft is a lifeline. That's where we get all our talent. We're going to do all these things. And you know what? This is his first year. He's got his staff in place. If the draft was so easy to do and that was where everybody's getting the resources, we wouldn't have teams that haven't had a championship in 40 years. The draft, there's no givens in the draft. There's no gimmies. As Jets fans, we know that. So my problem is that everybody's saying 12 picks, and they're going to say, you know what, 12 picks, we're getting 10 starters. No. We'll be lucky to get 4 or 5 quality players out of this draft. If he's lucky, he gets 7. I mean, we're going to be caught wheels up and down the street. But, Dennis, I mean, is that a fair assessment? If you had 12 picks, we actually use all 12 picks, how many quality players do you think you can get out of those 12 picks?
Well, that's very difficult to say. I mean, you don't know. I mean, it's always – but here's the thing. The good organization – why are good certain organizations always drafting – in the back end of the first round, and certain organizations always drafting in the front end, Detroit Lions. Again, good organizations make certain types of decisions. They make tough decisions.
What's your answer, though? What's your answer? How many out of 12 picks, based on – I mean, John Idzik doesn't have a big resume. I mean, I don't want to hear about how he built the Seahawks. Don't tell me how he built the Seahawks and how he built the Buccaneers. This is his draft with his staff. So based on what you know from last year and now, out of 12 picks, how many quality players – I'm not saying starters – you know, how many players that will make an impact this season do you think he'll get out of the 12?
All right, I'll let you know one second. First, I want to go over some numbers, Sam, numbers. You know, the Jets in the last 5 years have had the second least number of draft picks in over the last 5 years, which is 28. Also, in 2012, they did have 8 picks, but 5 of them were 187 and behind. So, you know, that's not – now they have a nice array of picks. So here's going to be my answer. I think you're going to get – because I remember that 2006 draft, which was the first draft that Tannenbaum had. I believe they had 10 then, and they did pretty good in that one. I'm going to say you're going to end up with like 6 players that are making contributions out of about half of them. Again, from varying contributions. Some maybe just on special teams. Some maybe as a role player. Some maybe as a starter. So I'm going to say 6. I'm going to say about half of them. So, I mean, look, the draft is not solving every single problem on your team. Neither is with any other team. It isn't with any other team. But here's the thing with the Jets, and I keep hearing this about needs. The Jets need this, they need that, they need this. Here's what they need most of all. And I'm going to give you this, and then we're going to bring a caller on. I'm going to give you the statistic. You know, the Jets were minus 14 in turnovers last year. You know, Geno Smith contributed 25 turnovers on offense. The offense contributed, I think it was 29 total, and the Jets had, 15 on defense. So they only had 13 interceptions and again, 2 fumbles, one of which happened at the end of the Buccaneers game in desperation time. The Jets need to kind of turn that number around. Because look, the Jets were ranked top 5 in defense earlier in the year. They had 25 sacks in the first 8 games, only 16 down the stretch. The defense got tired, and this is, if you'll say that pass defense was 22nd, but it wasn't 22nd for most of the year. As the year went on and the pass rush suffered down the stretch because the offense wasn't out there, especially during that 3-game swoon they went to, and the defense was on the field so much, I mean, that really hurt them. So they need to be more opportunistic. Hopefully the ball bounces a little bit right, a little bit more for the fumbles. More opportunistic. A guy like Patterson, I know, look, he's not the be-all, end-all, but he had 4 interceptions last year. That would lead the Jets. He played 6 games, had 4 interceptions. That would lead the Jets from all of last year. So they need to be more opportunistic. And how do you get turnovers? Get pressure on the quarterback. Have more speed, youth, and also down the stretch of the season. Make sure that offense is on the field more and the defense is getting their rest. So that's the way I feel. And I feel that is the most important statistic. Look, this defense was ranked 11th in the league, okay, and was out there on the field a lot. There's no reason why with a couple of pieces here or there in the draft, with what they have, that they can't be top 10 in defense again. It's all going to come down to number 7, stop turning the ball over, move the ball down the field a little bit more, give us better field position, and we can't be 29th in the league in scoring points. But I'm going to bring on our friend Jude from North Carolina now. Let him join in on the conversation. He's been listening in. So, Jude, Dennis, and Tyson, welcome to Jet Nation Radio. Glad to hear from you. I know you're listening a little bit. You want to chime in on some of the stuff we said, fine, or you want to kind of go in a different direction, that's fine as well.
Well, I just wanted to say, well, in regards to John Itzik, I know Tyson seems relatively frustrated with everyone loving him, but when you think about it in isolation, Itzik's moves are like, what is he doing? Does he know what he's doing? Why? But if you take it overall, all together as a whole, when you look at the off season as one picture instead of several segments and pictures as they go along, you'll realize it's relatively successful. We upgrade on pretty much a lot of positions.
When exactly have we upgraded other than Eric Decker? We re-signed what we've had.
Backup quarterback, we upgraded from Matt Sims and or Mark Sanchez and David Girard to Michael Vick. So, I mean, that's an upgrade. Let's see, I'm trying to think what else. Jacoby Ford would probably be an upgrade over Kyle Wilson or Josh Cripps as the returner, not to mention it'll probably push Clyde Gates out of the roster, which would automatically make the offseason a success. So what else am I trying to think?
I completely disagree with you, man. I understand what Jacoby Ford brings to the table, but I think some people may be seeing it from his draft class, not from his last couple years of playing football. I mean, what do you think about Dimitri Patterson? I mean, he showed some potential, but he gets hurt. To me, from everything I've read on him and looked up, he's more of a slot corner than anything. What are your thoughts on Dimitri Patterson?
Well, if it helps you, my thoughts, I had to Google him, so I didn't really know much about him, to be honest. I like the fact we signed someone. That's my...
Come on, man. Here's my question for you. I mean, you're killing me, Jude. Here's my question, though, is, you know, right now, you look at the wide receiver position. I mean, my honest assessment is I don't think Jacoby Ford's going to play a huge factor in that. I mean, Dennis and I both kind of agree he may not even make the roster. Do you still consider guys like a Miles Austin or Sidney Rice? I keep saying sign Jason Avant, but or do you wait until after the draft? Like, you see what happens in the draft. Do you take a chance of not signing these guys and hope nobody else does either, and then maybe go more kind of risk shopping after the draft? Which way do you prefer?
Oh, you wait until after the draft for certain. I mean, odds are if these guys aren't getting signed right now, they're probably teams aren't exactly banging down doors to sign them. So it's a safe probability to wait until after the draft and then see where we can go from there.
All right, Jude, listen, I got a question for you. Actually, just kind of want to go over something with you and take you through the mind of a general manager and what he's thinking, okay? Remember the Jets had Brandon Pettigrew into the facility? They were looking at him at tight end, Brandon Pettigrew. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what do you know of Brandon Pettigrew? In my opinion, he's just a very kind of average, mediocre tight end. That's my opinion. What is your opinion of him?
Same. He's solid, average.
Yeah, he's 29.
Yes.
Okay, you say he wouldn't change our offense. So he's not a game changer. He's not a guy who's going to take the top. He's not dynamic. You know, he's been in the league. He can give you some numbers, but he's not dynamic. He's just okay. So let's say the Jets did sign Brandon Pettigrew to the contract that he got from the Detroit Lions, which he got $16 million over 4 years, $8 million guaranteed. So now you have Pettigrew, you have Cumberland, and let's say you have Sudfield. Let's just say those are your three tight ends. Can you go out then? Can you realistically go out then in the first round and draft Eric Ebron?
Well,
what did you go tell him?
I would personally say, yeah, you can draft him because Zach Sudfeld would be cut. He would probably be a camp.
Yeah, but Jude, if you're going to draft a guy at 18, don't you really have to play him and eventually have him be a starter? And if you have Pettigrew for 2 years on the contract, pretty much stuck for 2 years. This is what I'm saying. Pettigrew's got this contract where he's pretty much stuck for 2 years. So do you want to maybe amend that answer now?
Well, in that case, I mean, you probably wouldn't draft Ebron. You would draft someone else, a wide receiver.
Okay, so you would limit yourself in the draft and say, look, we might want to get a tight end later in the draft to replace Sudfeld, something like that. But let's say that you really loved Ebron. But you again, I'm just saying it's a hypothetical situation. And let's say you were, instead of signing Pettigrew, forget about the money for a minute. Instead of signing Pettigrew, you signed Ebron. He came in his first year, did real well with Cumberland. You know, you mixed him in with a veteran guy, and he gave a good production. And then the next year, I mean, he just came into his own, was dynamic, was the guy you thought you were getting. Again, you know, it takes a while for guys to get their feet wet, and it's always nice to have a veteran in there. Cumberland's mm-hmm. been in the system a few years. It would be a nice little combination. I'm not saying the Jets are going to do this or whatever. I'm just using it as an example. When you sign free agents and give them big-time dollars, like Dominic Rogers Cromartie got with the Giants, they're stuck with him for 2 years. They're stuck with him, whether he's great, mediocre, whatever. And this is the danger you have to look at as a general manager, and this is what I like about John Idzik, is that he looks at it and says, at this point in time, with all the knowledge I have, I can't do this. It's not about money or anything else. It's not about saving money for next year. It's about production. And I think that I'm now limiting myself to signing. Now look, if Eric Ebron isn't drafted, the Jets might go in May, end of May, and sign Owen Daniels and say, look, we want to fill that way, and then we'll go in the next year's draft. Again, it's about options. And that's the way I think John Idzik looks at it. And he's building a team, one unit, with a mixed bag of things. He has signed free agents. He signed Eric Decker. And don't tell me that Brano Giacomini is better or worse than Austin Howard. You know what? You can make an argument that he's an upgrade over Austin Howard for half the money.
Yeah.
And look at Oakland. They're ridiculous. Eric Decker is, in my mind, the best receiver in the AFC East right now. I want someone to tell me a better receiver in the AFC East right now. Can you tell me one?
I would say Mike Wallace by a little bit.
Mike Wallace by a little bit. Okay, so I can make the argument you won't look at me like I got six heads. So he's made some signings. He made a trade. And look, he still has the draft coming up. He can make a trade. He can make – you never know. Look, Mike Brizell is a guard for Oakland. Hasn't had a good 2 years, but he just popped loose from Oakland. There could be some cap casualties. There could be a whole bunch of things moving forward. And you know what? He might be able to just – a guy that happens to pop loose. Like, who thought DeSean Jackson would be available right now a couple months back? Most people didn't think he was going to get cut and just be available, so you never know. And I think that John Idzik, the kind of patient approach he brings is, okay, let's wait and see. Let's weigh our options. The value I'm getting here isn't worth it. Let's see if something else pops loose in front. I can go in the draft. I can get a stopgap, or maybe I get a guy who's actually pretty good who I'm willing to give, you know, a bigger time contract to, who pops loose because of a cap casualty or something like that, dude. So that's the way I think John Idzik looks at it. I don't think it has anything to do with money at all. I think he just looks at value and production and says, how do I get the best of both?
I agree with you. I mean, I think I posted on Twitter I posted a tweet about whole John Idzik's philosophy. It's probably buried since I tweet so much, but I was saying essentially that, oh yeah, Idzik seems to withstand the waves and goes for the gentle tide in regards to free agency. So it seems as though he's not going to spend a lot in the first 2-3 weeks of free agency, but right now that's where he'll be relatively active. So,
hey, Jude, I got a question for you. Now, this is my concern, and then you're active on Twitter. You see what everybody's saying. The only question I have is, you know, like, if we're honestly going to assess Idzik, last year was – he made a lot of no-brainer moves. I mean, the trade for Ivory was great. The draft was good. I mean, picking up Salas and David Nelson, they both worked out for us. But in the grand scheme of things, he really doesn't have a huge resume of draft picks behind him. So if based on this draft, assuming we keep all our picks, we have 4 picks, how many guys out of this draft do you think will contribute next year, assuming we keep all 12 picks?
Okay, well – it would be good to have in the ballpark of 6 starters, like 6 impact starters that could go in and start a game right now. So 6 guys starting, in at least 3-4 guys that are second string. No, not too many developmental players, in other words.
Okay, that's fair.
Yes.
All right, dude, listen, we're going to wrap up because the phone lines have lit up a little bit here, so we want to make sure we get them all in. We appreciate you giving us a phone call tonight, as always, and keep up the good work on Twitter. Go ahead, give your Twitter handle out to everybody so they give you a follow, and then we're going to have to say goodnight.
Okay, well, my Twitter handle is JudeTruth, JudeTruth. Follow me. I tweet a lot. I don't know why. I'm going to try to stop tweeting so much. But, yeah, follow me. You'll be like, wow, this guy's Okay. Have a good day now.
Okay, Jude, you take care. Thanks, buddy. All right, that was our friend Jude there. And I'm going to bring on another caller. We got a couple callers hanging on. I'm sorry they had to wait. We are going to bring Nicholas on now. We appreciate him hanging on. So Nicholas, Dennis, and Tyson here with Jet Nation Radio. Nicholas is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he wants to talk about Idzik and the draft pick. So go ahead, Nicholas.
Hey, guys. Hey, this is my first time calling in. Really appreciate it.
Hold on a second. We got to give you something. It's your first time calling in. We got to give you something special. From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, folks. The first-time caller, Nicholas. So what do you got for us, Nicholas?
You guys are awesome. You're a class act. I listen to the show every week, and I'm very grateful for what you all do. You got great callers, and I think you ask terrific questions. I agree with most of your approach, you know, philosophically to the Jets. I mean, a lot of what I'm hearing on here, I'll just jump right in. Yeah, I think we're all kind of on the same page. People are thinking kind of positively about Idzik, and I'm of that same philosophy. I think that the guy is taking the perfect methodical approach, and the way I try to sum it up, I was trying to think of how I wanted to say this, is he doesn't just put us in the best position to take the best player available in the draft. I think the guy totally gets it. He's putting us in the position to always be ready and have the means to bring the right people in when we want to and when we need to. And that kind of philosophy really, I think that's what gets a lot of us excited, is we see that approach with the salary cap. We're seeing it with the people that he's getting rid of and the shrewd deals he's making and being patient. And so I love that. I think in the draft, you guys were just talking about Ebron, and if they feel he's the best guy there, even if we did have Pettigrew, even if we did have Cumberland, I believe that, you know, you can't have too many good tight ends. Look at the Patriots in recent years and successful teams. You bring in
Nicholas. This type. I don't mean to cut you off, and I agree with you with what you're saying. I mean, Idzik's approach, he's all about sustainable success. So it's not about this year. It's about every year being competitive. So I completely agree with that. But the only concern that I have is, I mean, right now, based on everything we've seen, we're putting a premium on the draft. So he really can't afford to blow it, I mean, which no team can, obviously. So, I mean, he gives us a lot of flexibility where if they want to go corner in the first round, we're fine with it, outside linebacker. I mean, we can basically do whatever we want at this point. So my question to you is, based on the 12 picks, how many of these guys do you think will contribute next year? Like, legitimate, you know, not a guy that, you know, fields one punt and then falls down. How many guys do you think will actually contribute this year out of the 12?
Well, I'd say based on the last year's draft, I mean, that's all we have to work with, right, with this team together, in terms of the team being management, Idzik and Ryan together. That's a pretty good first round where two guys are contributing heavily. They're essentially, you know, starters, if not really good starters at the end of the year in Milner and Richardson. I would say I'll toss a number. I'll go with a solid 4. I mean, I'm pretty confident. I know. I think that's a lot, too, to say that they're real solid contributors right out of the gate, at least by the end of the year. What do you guys think about that number?
No, that was kind of my point, where I don't want this notion going around that where Idzik's this great drafter, we have 12 picks and 10 are going to be players, because, you know, the history of the draft says that's not the case. So,
right.
You know, I agree with you. If we get 4, that's a tremendous draft.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I guess,
that's huge.
And I guess I have 2 more questions for you, Mike. But the second question is, if we go into the draft, would you be comfortable, we have the fourth round, see if we have some flexibility, would you be comfortable drafting a quarterback in the fourth round?
Not only that, but this almost leads into the whole different conversation about where we're at quarterback. I got some pretty strong feelings about that. Of course, if you got the right guy sitting there, like last year, I was watching the draft like you guys. I couldn't believe, you know, Geno popped up at second round. I mean, just on value, you have to take him there. I don't know how so many teams passed on him. He's not my favorite player, and we could talk about that maybe, you know, if we have a minute here, but. But the value, if it's there, you take another quarterback. Of course. Absolutely. Geno's no lock, and Vic is fading away. He's getting older. So you know he's not going to be the answer long term. You know, he might pop in and win a few games for us. He might surprise us and do really well. But you got to take quarterback there if it's the best guy. Sure.
Yeah, no, and I'm in the same boat. Like, I'm all about competition. You know, like you said, Vic, we kind of know what we have with him. And Gino, we don't know what we have with him. So if you get a guy, a quarterback that you value, he's there in the fourth round, I have no problem pulling the trigger either. I guess my last question for you before I let Dennis pepper you with questions is, you know, right now we have, there's guys out there like an Owen Daniels, a Sidney Rice, you know, Miles Austin. Do you wait until after the draft to maybe pursue a guy like this, or you, which could be kind of risky because there's still another month, which is kind of ridiculous to wait for, but it's another month that these guys could sign somewhere else. Do you wait until after the draft to make your next, like, low-risk, high-reward kind of signing?
Absolutely. 100%. Yo, because if you look at last year, like, I think you guys just mentioned it earlier on the show. We got, I was getting nervous last year. I don't know about you. I was getting nervous hearing the rumors about Ivory, and it seemed like it took forever. And then all of a sudden, he was on our team. You know, we gave up a reasonable, you know, mid-low round draft pick. I think it was fourth round. You know, and guys started falling into place. And then you got to not lose your discipline and overpay for some of these guys. I mean, I'm just so relieved. I don't know about y'all, but after the disaster with Tannenbaum, I mean, watching what we were paying for Holmes and, I mean, low-character people and losing guys like Kotchery and stuff like that. Right now, until I see otherwise in Idzik, I trust, I'm saying we're going to wait till after the draft to make many more moves at all, and I think that's the right thing to do. Get people at the right price.
Yeah, Nicholas, you know what? And again, I keep trying to bring this up a little bit about winning organizations and how they conduct themselves. And that's one thing you want to bring about. Look, let's put John Idzik's personnel or whatever he brought on his side. One thing that John Idzik did, first and foremost, is he changed the culture of this organization. When he walked in the door, what were the Jets? What was the moniker of the Jets? They had this moniker. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, man, I'm on the spot. The new one or the old moniker? Which one?
The old moniker. When John Idzik stepped in the door, the Jets had a moniker from the year before. What were they called?
Oh, geez. Which name weren't they called when he walked in the door? Honestly,
the big one? They put him on the back of the New York Post, and it was a clown nose. What were they?
Oh my God! You guys are killing. I'm. You say it.
They were a circus, Nicholas. They were a circus. They were a circus. Remember?
Okay.
Remember they were a circus.
Yeah,
they were.
Right. Yep. The Post with Ryan.
Yeah. The Jets
the
were a circus.
The tattoo on the shoulder, the tattoo, and all that stuff. Sure. Crazy.
Yeah. The Jets were a circus. There were leaks. There were media leaks. There was this and that. And that was one thing that I don't think anybody disputes that John Idzik came in and said, "Everybody's, you know, the locker room. We're gonna." Everybody shut your mouth. He tried to change Rex as much as he could and try to quell him and calm him down a little bit. Everything stays in-house, and things are not getting out and whatever. Again, he clamped everything down. That's one thing I think everybody would agree that John Idzik did. And I had an opportunity last year, again, to be in the locker room with those players. And I tell you, there's genuine love for that coach, and there's genuine love for each other. I mean, these guys really play for each other. They play so they don't mind doing the grunt work, so the other guy gets the glory. And that's, Tyson just asked me, what's a John Idzik guy? Let me just finish, Nicholas, I promise I'll let you in.
Sure.
What's John Idzik guy? The non-selfish type of guy. That's what he wants. He wants the guy who plays for the guy next to him, not for himself. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Oh, yeah, great point. Now, I think that's what I said when I led in at the beginning of the call. I really agree with a lot of the, you know, I think you guys really get it. And, you know, one observation I've noticed, you know, I've been a Jet fan for 25 years. I'm 36, so I was about 11, 12 years old. I've seen a lot of stuff go on, you know, in the organization. And, you know, in the recent years, from Herm Edwards, you know, very extreme, emotional guy, and then you went to an Eric Mangini who barely talked. You know, he was out of that Belichick school. And then you go to a Rex Ryan. And we just had such fluctuating personality types, you know. And I think I know I'm really optimistic like a lot of Jets fans. We're crazy. We're always thinking we finally got it figured out. But I really think that the combination of Idzik, how calm he is, he's very deliberate, making always the right decision, I think he really balances Rex out. I think Rex brings the fire and the passion. He's a good coach. but I think they balance each other. And I think that you didn't have that before when you had, like, Rex with Tannenbaum. It was like loose cannon all over the place.
Well, Nicholas, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think the bigger issue or the bigger change is Woody Johnson. I mean, in the past, I mean, Mike Tannenbaum right now is getting blamed for the cold winter. I mean, he's getting blamed for everything. So, but I think in the past, you know, Mike Tannenbaum was kind of held hostage by Woody Johnson. Woody Johnson's like, you know what? I want Favre, and I want Tebow. And he wanted the splash, and he wanted the headlines. And so while I think Rex Ryan matured as a coach, I think there's a possibility Woody Johnson maybe has matured as an owner and said, you know what? These splashes and headlines aren't winning me jack anything. So my question
for
you
point.
My question for you is, you know, the Deshaun Jackson situation, you know, Woody came out and had to open his mouth and say, we're interested in trading for him. So my question for you is, are you concerned that the lack of headlines, I mean, ticket sales right now aren't great because, you know, people don't really see, you know, you see a potential of a good team, but ticket sales still aren't great. Are you concerned about Woody Johnson starting to panic and saying, you know what, I've got to make a splash, I'm going to overpower Isaac, and I'm going to get a big-name guy. I mean, I don't know who it could be, but I'm saying, are you concerned that could happen?
You know, this is why I love this show, man. You guys are awesome. This is a really, really great observation on your part and good question to me. And yeah, unfortunately, that's always in the back of my mind, like deep in my heart, that I'm just praying it doesn't happen. Because I remember when they pulled the trigger on the Favre deal, you know, and when it happened, it kind of bummed me out. I was a Pennington guy, you know. I felt sad about that. But, you know, there have been a couple of decisions that I felt this way about. I'm just telling you, I'm going to leave it at this. I'm going to pray it doesn't happen again, because, and I don't think it will. I'm leaning towards the side where I'm about 70-30 that we're kind of over it, that he has matured. He's going to let Idzik run this team and build it the way he built Seattle. So I'm always a little nervous that we're going to do something, you know, stupid, but overall, there's nothing that tells me in the past year and a half, or whatever it's been since Idzik joined, that's going to happen again. You know, I'm feeling good. You know, I'm feeling real good. I'll wait and see.
Yeah, you know what, Nicholas? I think you take the approach that I'm just trying to tell people. Just wait. Start complaining in September and October when you're losing. Don't complain 3 weeks out of free agency. There's a lot of things that can happen. And you know what? Again, when you go into the season, the team that enters training camp will look nothing like the team that goes into December for any club in the NFL. And we all know there's a lot of moves to be made throughout the season and a lot of things happen. But, Nicholas, listen, we're going to have to wrap up. We've got a couple of the calls on the line. Thank you so much for being a first-time caller to Jet Nation Radio. Thank you so much for the kind words earlier. And please, by all means, call again. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a good week.
Okay, Nicholas, you take care now. Bye. All right, well, that was a great caller there. Nicholas, first-time caller. We always love first-time callers here on Jet Nation Radio. But I'm going to go. We've got a couple calls on the line. We're going to go in order. I'm going to bring our next guest on, and it's someone who's a friend of the show, has his own show on Blog Talk Radio, CNC Football Factory. And I had a chance to go on Saturday and discuss a few things with him. And he wants to talk about the signings, but oddly enough, I brought up one of these signings. So it's CJ from CNC Football Factory. So, CJ, good evening. Dennis and Tyson here. And what do you got for us on today's signings?
Guys, how you doing? Thanks for having me on tonight.
What's up, man?
Dennis, you got to play ponies, brother, because let me tell you, if there's anybody who was the first one to call Dimitri Patterson getting signed, it was you. So I definitely have to bow to the numbers today. I'm very proud of you, my
no
man.
No bowing, please.
You're making
please,
us
no
proud
bowing.
Over here. So,
well, I appreciate the opportunity to come on Saturday and talk a little bit. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your first anniversary show and spend a little time with yourself and the Carlos CNC Football Factory. And it was a really nice show there Saturday. So I suggest any fan of this show, you check out CJ and Carlos CNC Football Factory on the Blog Talk system. They do a nice job. They do a Saturday show, and it's nice to get a little football on the weekends. So what do you got for us on the signings besides the fact that I mentioned Patterson's name? What do you think of him? Tyson's not a big fan of Ford here, but I like the Patterson signing. Nice little depth signing there. Ford, I think he's going to struggle to make the roster. What do you think?
Well, I think Ford, if provided that he comes into training camp and he's ready to go, I think his speed could be an asset, if anything. I know they are going to I guess, attempt to use him on special teams as a kick returner, punt returner, which is, you know, something, unfortunately, you know, when we lost Antonio Cromartie, regardless of the hip or anything else for that matter, you know, we did happen to lose a speed guy, you know, returning kicks and returning punts. And, you know, you can't have your only kick returner and punt returner be Jeremy Curley. So, you know, essentially, as long as he can come into training camp and he's ready to go, and, you know, if Sanjay Lay can you know, coach him up and get the best out of him or do whatever he's got to do to tweak him, I think it could end up being a diamond in the rough for the Jets.
Why am I always the bad guy?
I know Tyson's ready to puke right now.
I'm always the bad guy on the show, and I'm so tired of it.
No, you're not the bad guy, Tyson. It's just everybody differs in opinions on some of the plays. See, like, I'm trying to take the Dennis approach of it, whereas, you know, you take a look at it, at the glass half full. Okay, they brought this guy in, another low-risk, high-possible-reward signing for Idzik. If this guy comes in and he lights up training camp and he could be somewhat serviceable in the regular season, then it's money well spent. But if he comes in and he lays an absolute goose egg in training camp and he stinks to high heaven, then you cut him with no sense of remorse.
See, my view of low risk, high reward is a Miles Austin, Sidney Rice kind of player that's actually done something in this league. So coming forward, the only thing he's done in this league is get hurt. So, I hear what you're saying. I think that the Jets are going to explore all options. It's competition. I mean, they may be able to find the returner in the draft if they get a running back later on or something like that. But what are your thoughts on Dimitri Patterson? He's a guy that, based on everything I saw, I mean, he had some success when he was healthy. He seemed to do well in the slot. What are your thoughts on Patterson? I mean, it seems like it's a good, just to add depth to the secondary.
Yeah, I think it's a definite depth move. He'll definitely be given the opportunity to compete for a starting roster spot. You know, and just his ability to go into the middle, you know, he's been able to deliver some pretty powerful hits, Dimitri Patterson. But also one of the good things is he's got somewhat solid fundamentals and being able to wrap a guy up. Now, you know, one of the biggest problems for the Jets secondary last year was tackling. You know, I mean, I could go back to a couple different receivers that carried Jet defenders, you know, for 15, 20 yards after the point of contact. You know, we need somebody who can wrap a guy up and bring him down right there at that point, you know, to stop that yards after the catch. So, you know, again, Dimitri Patterson, if he can come to training camp with those solid fundamentals intact, you know, he'll be serviceable at best.
I guess, and my last question for you, I'm glad you called in because I was dying to ask you this question, is, you know, with the last call we discussed this a little bit where, you know, everybody's giving Rex Ryan credit for maturing as a coach, and I think you could start to make an argument, minus his dumb comment about DeSean Jackson, that Woody Johnson could be maturing as an owner where he's kind of taking a step back and saying, you know what, I'm not going to get involved with the hoopla, the splash signings, all these headlines. He's letting John Idzik do his job. While that is good for the time being, the Jets, other than the headlines of Vic, kind of been, ticket sales are kind of stagnant. There's still not a lot of hoopla around this team. Are you concerned going forward that Woody Johnson may panic a little bit and force Idzik, you know, kind of overpower Idzik and say, you know what, I need a splash signing? Is that a concern for you?
Nope. I think it's not going to be a concern because Woody Johnson hired John Idzik to do a job, and I would not be surprised if during that hiring that Woody Johnson had said, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how much I want to make that splash move, you know, he's tired of the franchise being a joke. Okay, I'm sure every Jet fan in all over the world is tired of the franchise being a joke. So now Woody Johnson is saddled with the responsibility to be the anti-Jerry Jones, to shut his mouth, to take a step back, and to let his GM do exactly what he was hired to do, which is put a competitive product on the field. Now, if Woody Johnson wants to give input, then, of course, he's more than welcome to give input. It's his team. He has the ability to use his mouth. But the Jets need to avoid panic signings like they've done in the past because it's come back to bite them in the rear end. And right now, they're in a very good spot with 12 draft picks to do some major damage, to draft some quality players, regardless of whatever order that they're drafted in, to make sure that this team is competitive, not just for this year,
but for the next 5 years down the road. Because I think that every Jet fan wants the New York Jets in the Super Bowl conversation, not just this year, but for 5 years down the road.
CJ, you know what? I totally agree with you. And again, it was 2010 was the best team that money can buy. And I said this on your show. I said, why did the same coach quarterback combination go from 11-5 to 8-8 to 6-10 and totally be in disarray? Well, it came down to really the aggressive, and people keep saying, be aggressive, do this, do that. Well, that aggressive philosophy really came back to. It leaves the window open a short while. It gave them a very short window of opportunity. In fact, most teams haven't even gotten a window to where they could have even won a championship building that way. Most teams are doomed to failure building that way. Look at the Oakland Raiders. No one thinks they're going to the playoffs this year. So I agree with you, CJ, but listen, we're going to have to let you run. We're running low on time. We've got another caller. But just quickly, give out your information to where people can get your show, and I strongly suggest people give you a listen.
All right, absolutely. Thanks for the plug there, Dennis. You can catch us, blogtalkradio.com/CNC Football Factory. Follow us on Twitter, @CNC Jets Factor. You can follow myself, @JetsFan0523. My partner in crime, Carlos Sardinas, @CSSSardinas. So hit us up, guys.
All right, go Jets, CJ. You take care now.
All righty, guys. You take care.
All right, sorry, I just cut him off there a little bit. I got one other caller online. I'll bring him on in 1 second. Tyson, one thing I wanted to bring up real quick before I bring the caller on. You know, DeSean Jackson, he's kind of out of the conversation with the Jets, and it doesn't look like he's going to come to the Jets. And I said this about, you know, Morningwig and Vic obviously know DeSean Jackson. There were some reports out there that, again, please take everything with a grain of salt when you hear about this, like this particular person was sitting in the meetings with Woody Johnson and John Idzik and Marty Morningwig. But, you know, Morningwig and Idzik know DeSean Jackson real well, and I would think that if they really, really wanted him, that maybe people say, well, you know, Idzik makes the decisions. I think that maybe they would have, you know, some influence, at least say, look, these reports of things, you know, it's definitely out of bounds, and you should really seriously consider bringing this guy in. So, you know, who knows? And also Andy Reid. Now, I know there's cap issues and this stuff with the Chiefs, but, you know, here's some guys that know him real well, be it Morningwig and Vic and then Andy Reid, who kind of shine away from him, and I think that would send up a little bit of a red flag there.
Well, see, based on the reports I read, Andy Reid was interested, but they know they don't have the cap space. I think he has a very good idea what DeSean Jackson wants, and they just can't afford to. No matter how much salary cap, you know, creativity they have, they can't afford to have him. Dennis, and this, actually, I'm glad you brought this up, because this kind of one kind of bothers me a little bit. You know, does it really hurt to have DeSean Jackson visit and just talk to him? Like, I understand, like, the gang reports were thrown out the window, all these things. Unless Morningwig said, which I have a hard time believing, this guy is a huge problem, we don't want him. I mean, would it really hurt the Jets to have him in for a visit and talk to him and say, let's see what you want, what are you looking for? Like, I mean, to me, it's just like, it's due diligence. Explore all options. And, I mean, for all we know, they could have had a precursory phone call and said, hey, you know what, what are you looking for? And he's saying, $10 million, you're like, all right, thank you, no thank you. But, I mean, I'm really hoping that they at least did their due diligence and at least reached out to him and said, what do you know what I mean? Don't you think, I mean, at some point you got to at least explore the option just to see, you know, he may say, hey, I want a one-year show-me deal, you know, like a Revis contract. If that's the case, you know, maybe it's worth looking into. So, I mean, do you have that kind of perspective? You're just saying, I assume they didn't like him and that's it.
Well, I mean, again, I don't know what they did behind the scenes. Obviously, no one really knows, but I just think that, look, this is simple. Everyone knows it. It's a high-risk, high-reward signing, and it's kind of anti what Idzik would do. I guess people said to me, well, Idzik is not Idzik type of a maneuver, and I agree with that, but I really think if Morningwig and Michael Vick, two guys who played, you know, one coached them, played with them last year, said, listen, you've got to really give this guy a really hard look. I know that money's a factor. I think that they would have been more aggressive in pursuing him. But listen, I want to bring a caller on. He's been holding on a long time, and it's Brian from upstate New York. And he wants to talk a little bit about Morningwig's role in the offense, I guess, next season. So, Brian, Dennis and Tyson here with Jet Nation Radio. Welcome aboard. What do you got for us tonight?
All right. Thank you guys for having me on. Brian, I write for the site onejetatatime.com. And,
Brian Johnson.
Yeah, Brian. Oh, okay, thank you for recognizing.
Yeah. Sure, Brian, of course I know who you are. All right, no problem. Go ahead. What do you got for us, Brian?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of shift gears, and thankfully you kind of led me in here with Marty Morningwig, I feel like his role on this offense this coming season is really expanding, especially from what I'm hearing. You look at the Patterson signing who played with the Eagles. You look at Kurt Coleman who visited the Jets today. He played four seasons with the Eagles. Of course, Vic who signed earlier in the season. It really looks like Morningwig is getting more of a say. Mind you, it doesn't look like we're getting DeSean Jackson, but a lot more factors involved there besides one man's say. Do you guys feel like that is something that's happening? Is it because maybe Rex might be headed out the door if things don't go well this season? Or is it just all coincidence right now?
That's a great question because it's just like, I mean, like of all the Eagles, I'd see Jason Avant get signed here. But it's a good question because we had Joe Corey on a couple weeks ago, and he's like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Isaac bringing his guys from, you know, from Seattle and then with the front office ties from Arizona. Mm-hmm. Like, there was all this speculation, and that never happened. And now it's like Eagles are being mentioned. And it's like, I don't think it's like, is it Rex? I don't think it's Rex going out the door. Morningwig could be having a bigger say, which for me is a concern. Because, like, I want to see Isaac leave his footprint on this team, not Morningwig. But I guess, Dennis, I'll throw it to you. For me, I don't think it's a sign of Rex on his way out. But, I mean, it could be something against Isaac, if anything, saying, you know, why are we pursuing all these Eagles, you know, based on their future success or lack of success?
Well, I just wonder what Seattle Seahawks, I mean, maybe Golden Tate, you know, he signed with Detroit. They'd already signed Decker at that point when he signed. So, I mean, they haven't, you know, I saw a lot of people say, again, sign Emmanuel Sanders. He was still out there. But, again, I go back to what the pedigree argument was earlier. I said, you sign Emmanuel Sanders and you put Decker, you got to play these guys. I mean, here's the thing. When you give free agents a big contract, they have to play and they have to produce. So, you know, I don't see where the fit was from Arizona. I mean, who was the free agent from Arizona that you can name right now that the Jets should have really looked at strongly, or from Seattle? I mean, we talked about the tight end who was going to be released. Thank you, Zach Miller. And he never got released. We thought he would be a fit if he got released. But I don't really know that there was really those guys out there that Isaac had ties to. And you know what? Look, if a guy coached him or knows him from back whenever, and look, Rex brought his own guy, and he brought in Ed Reed. I mean, it was a guy he knew. Mm-hmm. He brought in Bart Scott back in the day. Again, these guys bring in guys they know because they know that they fit their systems and they know that they're good guys. So I don't really think look at it like this is Morty Morningwig getting his foot in the door to be the coach next year because Rex is on his way out. I don't look at it that way at all. I just look at it as taking input from a guy who's been there, done that. What do you think about that, Brian?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I wouldn't say that Morningwig would become the coach should something happen mm-hmm. to Rex, but more along the lines of, at least from what I've heard, is that Morningwig wanted to have a little more say last season and didn't really get some. Take this as for what it's worth, you know, very unconfirmed, but I heard something that when Morningwig came into the building, he actually wanted to keep Tim Tebow. Sorry to bring up the mention, but that's something maybe he's trying to get more say in this offense, and maybe we're going to see a different offense on the field. And if that was to happen, a different, you know, style of play, is that something you'd look forward to? This offense hasn't been working in previous seasons.
Well, I mean, to answer you, I mean, I think that's a great thing. I think in the past, Rex Ryan got his nose involved in the offense, and when he did, it was a disaster. For whatever mm-hmm. reason, if it was run the ball more, pass the ball more, I think when Rex got involved, I mean, I think he got criticized for not knowing what was going on, which is fine, so he got more involved, but I think it was, in some cases, excessive and actually held the offense back. So if Morningwig has true full control and is being allowed to add weapons that he wants, I think it's a good thing. So, I mean, I don't want excuses anymore. I don't want to hear about mm-hmm. what we don't have and what we can't do. Tell me what we can do. And, you know, like, it should be, we're all in now. Morningwig's the guy. Everybody bought into the system. You're building offense around his philosophies. Give him what he wants in an offense. I mean, I think it's a good thing. But, I mean, I guess, Dennis, do you agree with that or no?
Well, I think this, Brian, I hear what you're saying about Morningwig was a guy who was a pass-heavy guy. And that's what he was mm-hmm. when he was in Philadelphia. And he came to the Jets, and I think as much as necessity with Geno Smith, he did scale it back, did run the ball. You saw some games where Ivory, you know, carried the offense. But do I think that he's going to go back to the throwing the ball 60% of the time? No. Do I think that he's going to open up the offense some a little bit more, pass more, run more to eat, you know, that four-minute offense? try to, well, I hate to use this expression because I don't know what it means, but ground and pound in that four-minute offense and eat clock when he needs to, yes. But I do think he's going to open up the playbook some with Geno. After they're done with their draft and after they're done building their the complete team, you know, the team that goes on the field in September will be the one that I look at as the team, not the team that's currently constituted right now, because no team in the NFL is going to look the same that it looks right now. Especially, you better hope the Carolina Panthers, who have one wide receiver, Jericho Cotchery, I bet you they'd like to have our wide receivers. But I think Morningwig is going to open up the offense and do different things. He's going to get some guys, like a running back who can catch the ball out of the backfield, more explosive. He's got Decker that will open up Curley a little bit more. I'm sure they're going to bring in a wide receiver in the draft one way or the other. And I also still think that Miles Austin, Sidney Rice, or Jason Avant, or one of these other guys are at least going to come into camp and compete for a spot on this roster. Tyson, you have something else you want to ask Brian before we let him go?
Yeah, Brian, I guess we touched this with CJ and with Nicholas, and I guess my question tonight is just Woody Johnson and how he's handled this offseason. And kind of, you know, minus his comments last week, he's kind of taking the back seat and saying, hey, look, this is your team, this is your, you know, this is your offseason, handle it. But do you have any concerns where the Jets are out of the headlines, ticket sales are still kind of stagnant? Do you think Woody Johnson is going to step in and overpower Isaac and saying, listen, I need to make a splash? I mean, I don't know who the name is right now, but there's a guy that he just says, you know what, we need to make a splash. I want a star in here. Do you have any fear of Woody Johnson doing that this offseason?
Yeah, as a fan and as somebody, you know, that likes the game of football, I kind of want to see the owner take a back seat. I want to let the football guys do what they got to do and the business guys do what they have to do. So as far as Woody Johnson's role, I think he made the best choice he could by bringing Idzik in, and Idzik being the proven commodity with, you know, we see the talent that Seattle has at the moment that has, you know, some say from Idzik. So I think it's best that we just keep it separated. I don't care that if we're not in the headlines, I don't care if it's harder to find a story on Twitter or however. I think it's much better if we're just completely focused on football and the rest figures itself out. If you're winning, ticket sales go up. If you're winning, jersey sales go up. It's that simple. So I'm just awaiting victories for the New York Jets, and I think that starts at the head coach and the general manager levels.
All right, Brian, listen, we're going to wrap it with you. Just give everybody, you know, Brian runs a website, does some writing on the New York Jets, similar to JetNation.com. Again, I always say this to people. You know, look, I love JetNation.com. That's my home. But give other sites a chance. Give them a peek. Maybe you find an article there you like. It's like one big happy Jet family here. So, Brian, just give everybody your website so they can give you a peek and see if they like some of your writings there.
I appreciate it. Definitely love JetNation myself, so keep going on there. But our site is onejetatatime.com. Basically, just give our insight on what's going on, you know, some opinion, try to get different writers on, some guest writers to give theirs. And you can follow us at onejetatatime. Pretty simple.
All right, Brian, listen, we appreciate the phone call. We appreciate the input. And you take care now, okay?
Yeah, you guys as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Bye. All right, that was Brian from One Jet at a Time. Yeah, I've read some of his stuff. You know, Brian's a nice guy, and I've known him for a while. He's also friends with Julian Carter from the Green Zone Radio, who I'm close with as well. So, you know, good input there, Tyson. I love your question of the night. But listen, we got another phone call. We're starting to run low on time, but we have time for another phone call. Definitely got enough time to get his input and definitely get the question of the night in, Tyson. So it's Fernando from Clifton, New Jersey, and he wants to talk a little bit about John Idzik's moves. Now, Fernando, I'm not 100% sure. I believe you're a first-time caller, but I'm not 100% sure.
No,
you are
a
first-time caller.
And thanks for having me.
Okay, hold on a second, Fernando. You get this because you're a first-time caller, okay? So we have Fernando from Clifton, New Jersey, wants to talk about John Idzik's moves, and he is a first-time caller to Jet Nation Radio, folks. So, Fernando, Dennis and Tyson here. We're glad to have you aboard for the first time. What do you got for us on our New York Jets?
Well, basically, whatever you wanted to touch on as far as, like, all the craziness that's going on with regards to, like, the moves that John Idzik and the talk of late that's been going on regarding, like, Woody Johnson. I think Jet fans, and, you know, I've been a Jet fan for a while now, and, you know, I'm in my 40s now, so, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that's even, you know, been around a lot longer than I am, but we should be jumping for joy with the way they're being handled, because this is the first time in a long time I feel like the team is being handled almost as if it was a business, a Fortune 500 business. And, you know, when you're running a business, you're taught to do things such as hire slowly and fire quickly. And I feel like the Jets are just handling themselves. The way they got the GM going through that headhunter, I believe his name was like Jed Hughes from that Corn Ferry,
Stuff
like that. And just every move like that lends me to believe that Woody has finally, I don't want to say finally, but that he finally, that he's got it, that he's got an idea, maybe he's sick and tired of the losing, that he's going to let the professionals handle it. And I'm really stoked with all the decisions they're making. They are looking at value. They're looking to build depth. They're not doing any panic moves. They're thinking about the chemistry, the fit, the system, and there are so many moves to be made. It's so early in the season, especially with the draft being pushed back the way it was, that I love the direction that they're going in.
This is a great call. You just made some very great points where he's concerned about chemistry, which is huge in the locker room. That's one of like the most underrated things in football is chemistry on the football field and in the locker room. I guess my question, this is the question we've been asking the last couple callers is, you know, right now everything's fine and dandy. The Jets, there's a plan in place. Everybody's buying in. But if we learned anything about Woody Johnson in the past, it's always about headlines and selling tickets. And right now I think he's probably lacking both minus the Mike Vick thing. So while you're comfortable now and feeling positive, when the draft comes and goes, do you have any concerns about Woody Johnson kind of changing his tune and saying, you know what, it's now July, I want to make a splash to get some attention around my team and sell some tickets? Is that a concern for you at all?
Slightly. And I'll say this, for the most part, because of all the decisions and the way he's handled himself, I'm not too concerned about whether or not if the draft comes out with sexy names or so forth, that he go, you know, and try to make a splashy move. I wasn't too comfortable with the statement he made after that owner's meeting. I believe that he started mentioning names. Because that kind of made me feel like, oh, you know, you're trying to get a headline there. But for the most part, because of the decision-making and because it's gone on a few weeks and there's been so much criticism and he hasn't really jumped to the in front of a microphone and started, pressuring them, that I kind of feel like he finally is comfortable with the direction and maybe at least giving us another year to see where the parts move. And the whole point is to move the organization forward constantly, and I believe that John Idzik is doing that. And, I mean, if you're going to pay the money you do to a headhunter like John and Ferry, then and you're not he's a smart man. He has Johnson & Johnson for the most part. So at the end of the day, I can't believe he'd make such a critical mistake by jumping in at this point. I think I feel pretty comfortable that he's going to let things play out.
You know, Fernando, I have to give you, you know, I have to give Brian a lot of credit and yourself as well about winning. You know what? Look, the Jets were always the off-season champions, they were called, right? They were always making big moves. And you know what? And then the season would start. And, again, we went to those two back-to-back AFC championship games. And Tannenbaum, I think Woody had a lot to do with this, because I think if you look at Tannenbaum's record from 2006 and 7, he took more of a John Idzik approach. Now, maybe he was a little more aggressive, but 2008, 9, and 10, I mean, the trading away of draft picks and then, you know, trading up and trading for ready-made players, and ultimately, you know, that cost him. But when the team sort of took this downturn and Mark Sanchez was struggling in 2011, then 2012, we're bringing in Tim Tebow, and that was a big headline grabber, right? But look how it blew up in their face. And it was like it was just horrible, and it was embarrassing to wear your green and white. And you know what? Winning cures all of this. We will not remember that John Idzik carried over $10 million or $15 million in cap space if they're winning in December and they're heading into the playoffs. We'll all be thrilled. I mean, we'll all be thrilled. And then next year when the process starts all over again, we'll all be thrilled that we have resources and young players and we have money to give to Mo Wilkerson and keep that continuity. So, I mean, the money thing is like it's not John Idzik's money. It's not his money, and it's not even Woody Johnson's money. I mean, Woody Johnson is a billionaire. What does he care about $10 million? That's like a dime to him. It's not about spending the money because he's always spent the money, Woody Johnson. You know, he's always given out the contracts to whomever he needed to do whatever it took. And I guess he kind of realized that, look, I've given out these contracts. Now look at me. I haven't had a success. I'm not selling tickets. I need a winner year after year after year. And I'll use this as an example, Fernando, the Knicks. Remember the Knicks? I mean, I hate to use other sports, but I got to bring them up. When they had Isaiah Thomas running the Knicks, they could never, quote-unquote, rebuild. They could never do that. So instead they brought in stiffs like Eddie Curry and had a 25-win basketball team. Boy, that was exciting. You know
what? That was a disaster.
Tyson and I were both around your age. We've been watching the Jets for a long time. We've seen everything. We've seen them win playoff games. We've seen them make playoffs. We've seen them have terrible seasons, good seasons, whatever. We've never seen them win a championship. You know what? John Idzik is going to put a team on the field that is going to potentially win a championship every year. Every year, potentially, because all you have to do is make the playoffs, cross your fingers, and hope. Here's one other question I have for you, Fernando. We're going to wrap up. We really appreciate you being a first-time caller tonight. And I want to get your honest opinion, and I'll tell you what mine is. Who's had a better offseason this year, the New York Giants or the New York Jets?
I think it's the New York Jets, and I don't think it's even that close.
You know what, Fernando? I agree with you 1,000%. Jerry Reese is on the hot seat. And he has gone out, and he has panicked. He has overpaid for guys who are not going to produce for him. And you know what? He hasn't addressed really the problems on his team, especially on the defense, which is he doesn't have a legit pass rusher anymore. And don't tell me Jason Pierre-Paul's back starting him.
No.
Okay? He had 2 sacks last year. Jason Pierre-Paul just isn't the guy he used to be for whatever reason. So you know what? I don't think the Giants have had a better offseason thus far than the Jets. I don't think the Giants will have a better record than the Jets. I'm not a Giant basher or a Giant hater. I think when it's all said and done at the end of the year, people are going to look back at these shows. People who, Fernando, I mean, you should run my Twitter page and see some of the nasty things that I get sent to me. But you know what, Fernando? I really appreciate your insight. I really appreciate the understanding, and you take a very smart approach to it, and you understand that it's not only about this year, it's about next year too, and that the organization has put itself in a position to be a first-class, you know, top-notch, successful organization, not by making panic moves, not by being super aggressive, because all the bad teams do that, by making smart, business-like decisions, and I love the way you put it. But, Fernando, listen, we're going to wrap up because we're running short on time. Thank you so much for calling in to Jet Nation Radio, being a first-time caller, and you are welcome to call back. We are here every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.
And thank you both. I think you guys put on an amazing show. Thank you again.
Oh, Fernando, thank you. Thank you, sir. Bye now. All right, well, that was our friend Fernando there, a couple first-time callers tonight, Tyson. It really is great to see that you know, the people are calling up. They're excited. They're excited to call. And I know you want to – look, there are a lot of people that agree with what you said about Idzik that I have dealt with. And I'm an Idzik supporter. I kind of like what he's doing. Does it mean it's perfect? No. And like I said, I criticize him for the Goodson maneuver. Now, maybe Goodson comes back this year and has a great year. I don't know. But they paid him over $1 million, and they've gotten very little out of him. I know the ACL tearing is not his fault. Injuries happen. But, you know, let's put it this way, that salary cap situation real quick. You know, if the Jets had signed DeMarcus Ware and Darrell Revis and they paid him the money, you know, up front, Darrell Revis, I know that the Patriots are spreading it out a little bit. But let's say they paid it the $12 million. Well, he wouldn't give us a discount. Let's say it was $13 million. And they brought DeMarcus Ware. You know, the Jets would practically have no money. That would be it. That would be the end of the salary cap space. So for all the salary cap space they have, it would be gone with 2 players. I mean, this is why you got to just kind of be careful and say, you know what? Yeah, the fans might love Darrell Revis, but you know what? After the 1 year is over and I look and I say, now I got this big hole here and I don't really know how I'm going to fill it and I don't have money to fill it because Joe Hayden's out there who I'd like to get, but I can't get him. And here's another thing, again, about Darrell Revis. And you know what? I love to talk about Darrell Revis. And whether he's going to have a great year, who knows? I don't know. But when the Patriots come out of the huddle on 3rd and 7 and they spread the field with 5 wide, with Shane Vereen and Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman and Aaron Dobson and Gronkowski, if he's healthy. They spread the field with 5 guys. Can Darrell Revis cover all 5 of them? I mean, that's just my point. I mean, you know what? It's just you need to have role players, guys that come in. And this is what I talk about Patterson. This guy can come in a nickel and dime situations and really be serviceable. He could start if he had to. If he had to, he could start for you. And I just wonder this, Tyson. I want to ask you a question. We talked about Cromartie. Cromartie had a bad year last year, whether you want to blame the hip or whatever. He had a bad year. Do you think that maybe the Jets can just kind of paste it together with what they have now? Forget about the draft. Let's say they don't draft anybody. Do you think they can paste it together and Kyle Wilson, Darren Walls, and Dimitri Patterson can sort of pick up the slack for Cromartie and have a more productive year than Cromartie had last year? Do you think that that's at least possible?
Well, I think it's possible, and the way you offset it, Dennis, this is not going to be the best way to offset it is a pass rush. So there's ways to hide the secondary. If you do have to do that, there's ways to hide the secondary, and you got to look at Antoine Barnes coming back, Quinton Copeland is going to be more improvements on a roll. So there's definitely ways to hide it. So, I mean, I agree with you. I was playing the devil's advocate role with Isaac because we both know that I like the approach he's taking. I think it's good. My problem is that let's not put this, like Parcells always says, let's not put this guy in Canton yet. It's his second year. He's made smart moves. He's made no-brainer moves that every other GM would have made, too, in terms of clearing cap space. Now the onus is on him. The draft is on him. And now he has his staff in place where he's making decisions. You know, I thought Chris Clemens was a good safety that went very relatively cheap to the Texans. I thought he was in a great fit in the Jets secondary safety. I thought Walter Thurman, a guy that played for the Seahawks, you know, everybody said, oh, he's a nickelback. Well, so is Dimitri Patterson, and Walter Thurman, I thought, was a better player. So, I mean, he's making his educated decisions on guys he wants, which is fine. Listen, I respect it. I like that we're not out there coveting names like Maurice Jones-Drew. We're looking for value, which we both respect. But at the same time, my biggest concern is that we have 12 picks. We're not getting 12 starting players next year out of the draft. And let's just kind of keep everything in perspective. Jets Nation is excited. If we have flexibility, we have resources, which is the key to success. Now we have to use them wisely to keep things in perspective, Dennis. And that's kind of was my point. I try to be devil's advocate to kind of see if we can generate good discussion. But it's just, you know, like our callers have said, if we can get 4 quality picks, 5 quality picks, and that's reasonable, that's fair, and that's considered a very good draft. I mean, don't you agree?
Yeah, and I think this also about the draft. Just a programming note for everybody. We're going to – it looks like we have Scott Wright from Draft Countdown set up for next week. It's just being confirmed. So, you know, I say it's 99% sure we're going to have him on, and he's great. We had him on last year, and he knows the draft soup to nuts. So we're going to kind of be focusing the next couple of weeks on the draft more exclusively, and you know, we're going to bring you some great content, so, you know, make sure you keep tuning in. Also, just remember, you can always download the show on iTunes. Just search Jet Nation Radio to find it. But, I mean, here's the thing with the draft, and this is, I think people are going to be surprised with the draft, in my opinion. I think the Jets are going to go for, like, a lot of linebackers. Don't ask me why. Maybe 2 or 3 linebackers. I think that John Isaac looks at the draft not only for needs, and everybody knows drafts fill needs and that you look at needs, but I think he's looking at, okay, I've got Calvin Pace. He's a veteran. I want to definitely get myself a pass rusher who can play behind him, who can play in space, a guy like that, who kind of fits that mold. And while he learns behind Pace, kind of like Demario Davis did behind Bart Scott, maybe he wants to pick a guy who's going to learn behind David Harris, because David Harris is going to be a free agent after this year. So, I mean, again, he's going to look at it. I think he's going to draft for production now and for production in the future to leave himself options. I don't need to pick up Pace for the second year. Thank you, Calvin. We have a guy, or maybe I better bring him back so that he had a good year. So I think people are going to be very surprised at exactly the way the draft falls for John Idzik, because I think he looks at it like you should the draft for the most part, which is you're building for the future with the draft. I know you get results now, but you in general do not get, even if you get a great player like Mo Wilkerson, a very good rookie year, but his second year and his third year were much better. So I think he looks at it like, I want guys who are, you know, very capable, can fill in behind veterans, and I have options. So that's what I think John is just looking at the draft. Again, we'll hopefully have Scott Wright on next week. We're pretty sure we're going to have him. He'll go into it, and then we'll have my colleague from JetNation.com, Ron Pickett, back on. He just put a mock draft up on JetNation.com. You could take a look at it. But I honestly, Tyson, I think people are going to be a little bit surprised at exactly how John Idzik approaches the draft. I just get a strange feeling about that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so, too. I definitely think there's going to be some surprising picks and, you know, surprising, you know, selections that people are going to be like, why are we doing this? We already have such and such in place. Or, And it's about sustainable success. I mean, he's got resources. We have flexibility. And, while you want to address this season, you're addressing next season as well. So you could see that, I mean, unless they draft an offensive lineman in the first round, which, I mean, I think I may yell and scream, but I think there's definitely be some surprise. And you know what? At this point, everybody's buying in. We're all in for the draft and building a team, so you got to have faith at this point.
Yeah, and again, I really think that, you know, these couple signings, again, they're depth signings, whatever. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think Ford's going to make the team, but who knows? Again, bring him into camp, see what he gives you. If his contract has no guaranteed money in it, and I haven't seen his contract yet, but he's got no guaranteed money in it, he comes into camp, you cut him, you didn't pay him anything. So we'll see how that goes. But I do think that Izik will look, and I hate to use this term, mini draft, you know, or semi-draft, or whatever Tannenbaum used to call it back in the day, like kind of the after-draft and the players who were floating out there. And I think he will definitely look at that. And again, the money, I mean, people look at the money and they hear these numbers about the money, but you know what? Money goes quickly, and there's a lot of season, there's startup costs, there's in-season costs, and there's your draft class, and then there's the guys you sign. You'd be surprised how quickly money goes, and you know, maybe you'll be surprised the amount of money the Jets actually carry over, or do think they will carry over some money into 2015. But you might be surprised at the actual number, what it went to from in March, excuse me, April now, and what it will actually end up with this time next year or maybe a month earlier going into 2015. They'll be a little surprised that, wow, the money seemed to go quicker than I thought. But, Tyson, what a wonderful episode of Jet Nation Radio tonight. We had a couple first-time callers. We had some of our regular callers. And it was just terrific to hear all the input. You had a wonderful question about Woody Johnson. I do think that Woody has taken a step back. I think that, again, the Jerry Jones and the Daniel Snyders, they've found a way to mess it up time and time again. And I think Woody just says, you know what, I'm a guy who can make Band-Aids, but I can't make a football team. That's what I pay you, John Izik, to do. And guess what? I'm going to hold you accountable. And if you make bad decisions, I'm going to fire you. Again, John Izik, he's accountable for every single decision that goes on in that building. He's accountable. The buck stops with him. So if he signs a guy to a bad contract, it falls on him. If he doesn't sign a guy and he ends up being great, it falls on him. So we'll see. He drafts a guy and he's a bust in the first round, it falls on him. He's the one, ultimately, he says, I'm the one who puts the name down on the card. So that's kind of what I like about John Izik. The one thing that I like about him, he's very accountable, and he says, you know what? I don't care if it's popular. I don't care if the media kills me. I don't care if the fans kill me for this, because I ultimately know the fans will come back to me when they see a viable product on the field. So, Tyson, just want to thank you for another great episode, and I want to thank the callers. I want to thank all the listeners, all the downloads. Again, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter. It's at Jet Nation Radio. The big site is at Jet Nation. It's jetnation.com. I mean, there's so many ways to find us. You know, keep posted all these things so when you hear about the next episode, hopefully we have Scott right on, like I said. Looks like it's going to happen. Should be a great one. I can't wait to get Scott's input on the draft.
Yeah, Dennis, I mean, I definitely want to thank the callers tonight. I mean, it's such great perspective on a team. Everybody has their own philosophies on players and on Izik, but it's always great debate, so I definitely appreciate it. We appreciate the tweets, the downloads. And, you know, as we have, I mean, like you said, we'll probably have Scott Wright on next week, and this guy is like a football encyclopedia when it comes to the draft. So if you have questions or things you want, tweet us, you know, contact us. If you want, we can ask him to them. So it's a good thing. And, Dennis, one thing I just want to point out to you real quick. I want to be the first one to do this. If DeSean Jackson does go to Redskins, I would definitely be interested in Santana Moss on a one-year deal. I have a feeling if DeSean Jackson goes, I think Santana could be an odd man out there. If that is the case, I would definitely make him an option for the Jets. I just like the way he plays. I wish he never left, to be honest with you. But if he does become a free agent, he's the kind of guy that I like to bring in just for a veteran leader. He's had a very productive career. I think he'd add a lot to this offense.
Well, that's a very interesting philosophy there, and we'll see what happens. And you know what, I don't disagree with you that he definitely would be a name that they should, as Tannenbaum used to say, kick the tires on. Just so everyone knows, you can also email us at it's jnradio@jetnation.com. If you have some draft questions, this would be a good week for you to email them to us. We'll see if we can get them out to Scott. I also want to thank our switchboard operator, Steve, for working the busy phones tonight. So, for Tyson Rausch, this is Dennis Agapito. Jet Nation, we'll see you next week at 8 o'clock.